Walking is the thing to do in Abbotsford. Participants in the first ever local Jane's Walk toured neighborhoods across the city. Jane's Walks are named after activist and writer Jane Jacobs, who is best known for her book, The Death and Life of Great American Cities. Jacobs believed people who live in a city must be actively engaged in decisions about how neighborhoods in their cities change and grow. Urban historian Marion Fedori joined me to talk about why Jane's Walks matter and why the time is right for people in Abbotsford to get walking.
I'm very pleased that Jane's Walk has come to Abbotsford. It's an international event that was started almost 11 years ago after the death of Jane Jacobs in 2007. And there are over 2,000 walks worldwide. Last year there were in 2010 cities, I think 52 countries on six continents. So it's really impressive. But for me, it's very important that Jane's Walk has come to Abbotsford, as I think the city is transitioning somewhat from a smaller local community to a full-fledged urban place.
And how did you get involved?
I was involved with Jane's Walk in Alberta. I'm kind of a partial Albertan and a partial BCite. As an urban historian, I was very used to taking people on public history walks, looking at heritage issues and architecture. And these walks translate very well to a Jane's Walk scenario to bring more information to the public about what is important. So that would be built form, buildings which most of us recognize, either residential buildings or commercial buildings or institutional buildings, natural forms, geography, street patterns, which are really important to cities and very important to the theories of Jane Jacobs, because she believed the street is where the city begins, walkability on sidewalks and streets.
For listeners who have never heard of Jane or Jane Jacobs or Jane Walks, what is the true significance of these walks for you, and especially in connection with Abbotsford's walks?
Well, I think the true significance of these walks are that this is a legendary legendary philosophies were brought forward through her writings. Jane Jacobs was not trained as an urban planner, nor was she an architect, but she was a citizen, and she started to advocate very early in her life in both New York and then later in Toronto as a female in the late 50s and 60s, seeing that lots of things were happening that were not positive for families, individuals, and just generally in urban life. So she started writing for the Architectural Record. Her husband was an architect. And then she wrote the very important book, The Death and Life of Great American Cities, which was and is to this day considered sort of the treatise on urban planning in modern times in the 20th and 21st century. So to be able to translate this sort of international viewpoint to urban life to a region or place that you live, I think is really important for everyone and important for me. As I'm discovering a new place, it's been interesting to navigate a smaller community, but also realize that there are huge amenities here. And what's making this city perk right now, I think, is sort of a transitional nature. Moving from a smaller local service center to a very urban place, strong university, major hospital, jewel in the crown, art gallery, the Reach, lots of cultural activity, and then a lot of entrepreneurship.
Jane Jacobs really discovered that she had a voice and that she could make a difference in her own neighborhood. I think that's how she got started. Why is that important now in the context of Abbotsford?
Well, Abbotsford has just created or passed its bylaw last year for its new official community plan, which it's looking at what Abbotsford will be by the year 2020 with huge population groups. So their projections are that the population will be 200,000 people. So the community plan and the planners in this city have worked really hard to devise an inclusive plan to bring citizen action and public involvement. They did a lot of stakeholder involvement, and they have lots of access through web involvement if you still want to comment on the city plan. And of course, the councillors have been really wonderful in approaching people too. So the Jane Jacobs really believed that people had to insist that government try things their way, that they just not accept what the government said, that the people had a voice in creating their place.
And so this isn't just about people, because the city wants you to do this. It's because people themselves have to want to participate and have a voice. Is it directly connected with the city, or is it independent?
It's a partnership, and it's an informal partnership, and this is how it kind of works all over the world. And each Jane's Walk kind of takes its own identity. In some cities, there might be one key organization that really pushes it along. Here in Abbotsford, we've really brought together a group of partners and individuals that really haven't sat at a table together. They connect with each other. So that's Tourism Abbotsford, the City of Abbotsford, 150 Abbotsford, the Abbotsford Downtown Business Association, the University of the Fraser Valley, the REACH, Heritage Abbotsford, and the Arts Council, Abbotsford Arts Council, to kind of pull together some common ideas and programming. And it's just skyrocketed. We have 13 walks, which is a really big start for a community of this size, considering some cities don't have that many after 5 years of planning.
Okay, so tell me about some of those walks, and especially the ones that you are participating in or leading.
Sure. One will be led by the staff of Truthui House, which will be a historic walk. And if you'd like it in French, it could be a bilingual walk around Mill Lake. The second walk is being sponsored by the Arts Council of Abbotsford, which is Pat Mertz is leading, and she is a wonderful artist here. It's a sketching walk of the vicinity of Mill Lake. And then we will, at 1:30, be able to go over to the city precinct by the REACH and City Hall and the library, and Councillor Sandy Blue, with Chris Folds, who is the historian at the REACH, will be leading a walk of the plaza, talking about history and how it's about to change with the new courthouse and a variety of other things. There will be walks at the University of the Fraser Valley with the president, Mark Everett, and also a natural history walk. And then I'm leading my walk, which is going to be in a kind of interesting community called Alexander. It doesn't really have a formal name, but people refer to it as that. And this is a 1950 subdivision, just off of McCallum, and we will be looking at sort of three things on this walk. History of the area, how it expanded to that area, the mid-century modern architecture that's there, and then this is my own specific interest is modernism, and then we'll be having some local community members join us on the walk to talk about the ideas of how mature neighborhoods, and this is a mature neighborhood now, it's 60 to 65 years old, are being affected by densification, i.e. Older or smaller footprint houses are being demolished with a larger infill, or sometimes two houses on one lot, and how this changes streetscapes and sort of the nature of communities, and how citizens can work towards these kind of targets of densification that the city is trying to throw out, but also maintain some of the qualities that make their neighborhoods special and why they're there in the first place.
Several residents joined the first ever Jane's Walk in their community.
Yeah, we've seen lots of change within the neighborhood. We immediately fell in love with the form and character when we were looking to purchase. Large lots, we have a third of an acre, private, and there's a lot to the character of the homes when you walk in, with hardwood floors and even stuccoed walls. Some of the houses still have the true-to-form small kitchens.
That was Nova Hopkins describing why she and her family care enough to become active in their neighborhood, something that resonated with others on the mid-century modern tour led by Marion Fedori.
It would have been beautiful with the meadow that was set in the meadow.
So people don't necessarily associate architecture with either the 50s and 60s or with Abbotsford, so just curious to know what all of that means for you as an urban historian interested in architecture.
Well, one of a really important building is in the city of Abbotsford, and this is the second Truthui House that was built for Richard B. Truthui in 1960, actually started in the late 50s, and designed by a very prominent architect, Fred Hollingsworth. And Fred Hollingsworth's son is still practicing in Vancouver. And this hugely forward building is still alive, and the current owner is helping lead the walk, and they are restoring this particular structure. So I think that right now most cities are kind of acknowledging that post-war heritage is very important. Some cities even extend their inventories to 1960, 1970. And Abbotsford was really a small community, village community before that period, and it really started to boom in the 50s and 60s. So it was kind of this extension of the suburbanization of Vancouver. And so you get sort of large city ideas coming into the region as early as that period. There are some really good high-end designed houses, and I'd say probably half a dozen of them. We haven't had time to do all the historical research on these buildings yet to figure out architects or dates of construction, that kind of thing. But there's also the typical things of that period in terms of the bungalow style, which would be buildings that would face, were generally characterized by large open window spaces, carports, big things. So when you see these carports of the 50s and you think, oh, that's terrible, I need a modern garage, that was a huge thing. And also some local vernacular. The Claiborne Brick Company, which most people know from Claiborne Village, was in a huge growth period at that point. And so prior to the Second World War, much of the brick that came out of Claiborne went all over North America, particularly to Vancouver and major Vancouver buildings like the Marine Building, and the list is endless. But in the 50s, this local source of brick was used in a lot of house building construction by developers.
I had no idea. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. So can you paint me a picture of the different periods of settlement that it'll be possible to learn about through these walks?
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I think most people, when they go to downtown Abbotsford on Montrose and Estadine, understand that there are some very early pre-Second World War buildings. Matsqueet, Abbotsford, and Sumas were all individual towns, and they had their own identities, and it had a strong Swedish and Scandinavian rural identity, and there's even some vernacular in terms of architecture that's been transferred from that kind of ethnic settlement. Abbotsford itself was much the directed by kind of the CPR and rail transportation connection to the rural area, and also to the Mill Lake. And we have several tours of Mill Lake and the Truthui Lumber Company, of course, which was one of the first, you know, huge established industries. And the Claiborne Village tour is really wonderful. It's going to be led by Cyril Holbrow, who is really an unbelievable community gem. He himself worked for the Claiborne Company for over 40, I think around 40 years, and he's been retired for 35. He's literally in 96. I don't think he'll mind me telling you that. And he will be taking the tour of this wonderful brick yard community. It was the first industrial town built in the province of British Columbia. So it is a designated heritage area, and people are well aware of its footprint by visiting the store and the school and the church.
So what can people expect to happen on these walks in terms of conversation, in terms of what might come out of them just by participating in what is a big conversation about the city, its neighborhoods, what it looks like now, and what it might look like in the future?
Well, I think they're going to be energized, and I think they're going to feel connected. And they're going to understand that they're part of a larger cultural landscape as people living in the community. So I think that's sort of the number one thing. And then they're going to meet others to carry on these conversations. So, you know, in the downtown, the business owners might be able to help you figure out ways to talk to your counselors if you want more restaurants, or if you want to, you know, have relaxed zoning, those kinds of things. So I do think it's going to bring more connectivity to the city on many levels, between institutions and people and business.
You've mentioned some of the pressing issues facing the city. Are there other big pressing issues? There's densification.
Transportation is huge here. You know, it's very difficult to look at a car-dependent place, which is an amalgamation. I think that Abbotsford has, I think I read somewhere, that has one of the largest geographical areas of an urban space in BC. So it's not concentrated. So, and, you know, trying to get from point A to point B is quite difficult. People sometimes don't do that through the city on public transportation. They just jump on the highway, and this is why why we all don't like to be on the Trans-Canada Highway at 5 o'clock between, you know, the first exit and the last exit of Abbotsford. So trying to make the major corridors more walkable and sustainable is a very big part of the official community plan. So some of the, they've got three regions, and one of, if you were to look at sort of the central, I call it shopping region by the malls, these are, they seem like they're very, and they are sometimes very difficult roads to traverse to get across to businesses. They aren't particularly appealing with green space. They have very much of a car-dependent culture with the shopping mall parking in front of them, that kind of thing. So it may be difficult to transition a lot of this, but new planning processes will help. And as people move into these central locations, services will follow them because they'll want to walk to them. But public transportation is going to be a really big thing, and it's probably going to need to take it even to a further level of beyond just local city transportation to the region. I know everybody's crying for some other way to get to Vancouver than on the, you know, limited West Coast Express or in your car. So it's getting close as this population booms.
So that's just a huge conversation.
It's
I can
huge.
Hear all kinds
it's
of conversations
huge.
Coming
it's
out
huge.
Of that
yeah.
in terms of building neighborhoods that mm-hmm. are walkable, that have their own mm-hmm. shopping, mm-hmm. local shopping, and
right.
as you say, larger
right.
transportation.
And now. You see it. It's percolating. There's coffee shops showing up in a few different places. There's some core places. Generally, some of the new residential commercial buildings have, you know, a fair amount of space for new business. And then I think there's a huge entrepreneurial spirit of kind of a younger generation here. And we see it with the craft breweries and some of the restaurants that are about. And an appreciation of architecture. Some of the new are higher standards in architecture. Some of the new building that's going on downtown. And also with the university, there's some very fine buildings. So that's a big thing for cities, too, is to value architectural design. And that might be another element of the conversation.
What does the future look like? Is this going to be an annual event?
I think it is. I just think that the spirit's there, that the groups that are involved are committed, Tourism Abbotsford, the city, Arts Council, Heritage Abbotsford, and the Downtown Business Association, and the university's huge opportunity, I think, next year for students from the university to really become players in Jane's Walk, particularly the students in the geography department that are studying urban planning and probably all have been asked to read in their first year of study The Death and the Life of the Great American City. There's quite a bit of enthusiasm. There is a student this year who is leading a food walk.
Which brings me to ask you to tell me the story of how this actually got started, because I understand it was a geography student at UFE who started all of this.
It was. He's gone on to do a graduate degree, I believe, in Montreal at McGill. I had been very involved with Jane's Walk, as I said before, in urban areas in Alberta. And I actually contacted him see if there was any way to get involved. And then this group kind of fell apart because it needed a lead. And I think for a student, it's quite difficult to sort of tie into these other groups. But if you just were to go to janeswalk.org and see which cities were participating, guess what's first in the alphabet? And it's coming up first of all the 212 cities. It's Abbotsford.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's great.
So there's some marketing there, right? We also have two great walk leaders, Connie Hackett, who's a social media specialist involved in the arts, and Jennifer McKeown from the Downtown Business Association. So they're kind of the front of this in terms of promoting it. And we are really getting good following on social media. If you want to learn more about Jane's Walk, just go to our Facebook page, janeswalk.org Abbotsford, or check us out on Instagram and Twitter.
Thank you so much, Marion.
Thank you.
Marion Fedori is an urban historian. She's on the board of Heritage Abbotsford, and she's helped to organize the first ever Jane's Walk in the city. You've been listening to Joni Mitchell's Big Yellow Taxi, Golden Earrings Radar Love, Abbotsford's very own Jordan Klassen's Piano Brother, and Fats Domino's I'm Walkin'. I'm Stephanie Gould. Thanks for listening.